Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Morning Lineup podcast. I'm Anthony Kastrovitz, along with Richard Justice, and we are recapping the Most Valuable Player Awards that were handed out by the Baseball Writers Association of America on Thursday night. Boy, it was a close one in the National League. Giancarlo Stanton is your winner, and he beats Joey Votto by just 2 points in the voting, one of the closest races of all time. And then the American League, we thought that would be a much closer race than it turned out to be. Jose Altuve beats Aaron Judge. Altuve had 27 of the 30 first place votes. So let's start right there, Richard. Just, you know, the surprise factor or lack thereof. What's your kind of general takeaway with the way one race was so close and when one race was kind of a runaway for Jose Altuve?
Yeah, you know, I think, I don't know how you feel about it. I think I'm more surprised that Altuve won in a runaway, that he got 27 of the 30 first place votes, you know, because we've been debating for weeks. I mean, you can make a case for both Judge and Altuve. I mean, an easy case. And on networks, on TVs today, they were breaking it down. You know, and like what I came up with, the more you looked at the numbers, was the fact that there were some clutch stats late in games. I think that's something we all sort of accept now. They were overwhelmingly for Altuve. You know, and in the other league, I don't know how you feel about it. You know, that Stanton and Votto got 10 votes apiece. You know, we get back into this thing that some more traditional baseball writers are not going to vote for a guy who played on a losing team, even though Stanton won, Votto was second. But there were a lot of guys that, you know, Stanton got a sixth place vote. Votto got 2 5th place votes. But to me, I mean, just as you looked at the numbers, Votto had the best year offensively. You know, having said that, most of the season, I thought Goldschmidt and Altuve would be our MVPs. So, you know, it was a close race, and it's one of those where you go back and look at every ballot and say, whoa, this guy, you know, could have moved this guy here, that guy here. And I'm wondering how Joey Votto feels tonight. I mean, he had one of the great offensive years that any player will have and the best year of his career, a guy that's headed for the Hall of Fame. So,
well, I know how I feel about it. I thought Joey Votto was.
Tell me how you feel about it.
I don't feel great about it, Richard. I love Joey Votto's case for MVP, even though, let's face it, he was on a bad Reds team. And, of course, that does affect you in the voting. He had 5 fourth-place votes, 2 5th-place votes, 4 third-place votes. And that's really what it comes down to. Obviously, the point system being what it is, both Votto and Stanton had 10 first-place votes apiece. Stanton had 10 second-place votes to Votto's 9, so that was a big difference maker right there. But obviously, you know, one way or another, this was going to go to a player from a non-playoff club.
Yeah,
Stanton had an amazing season, 59 home runs. I just thought that Votto's situation was so much rarer in today's game. You know, what do you value there? And for me, you know, this guy, he played every game this season, 162 games. He reached base in 150 of them. He had 134 walks against just 83 strikeouts. So that was certainly a rare hit tool that we saw from Mr. Votto. But, you know, I get it. I would have expected both of those guys to get some down ballot support just because there's always going to be voters who will marry themselves to the idea of this award going to a guy from a playoff team. So you expected that. I did not expect it to be this close. And when it is this close, as you said, you start really digging
right
in the minutiae.
Yeah.
The voting
you vote Joey Votto 5th and you go, what are you looking at here? Joey Votto's on base percentage this year was .454. That's 39 points higher than anyone else. I mean, that's astonishing. And he led the NL in, you know, weighted runs created plus and weighted on base, all of that stuff. You know, Anthony, I thought last year with Trout winning, we'd reached a point where we were just going to vote for the best players. You know, to say that Mike Trout didn't deserve it because his team was losing. I mean, how insulting to Mike Trout is that? That Mike Trout doesn't care? That, you know, that Joey Votto's preparation is any less intense? In fact, you would say maybe his job is harder because, you know, he doesn't have that playoff intensity. And then we had the Cy Young Awards this week, where wins seem to not be factored in as in the past, that we understand that wins are partly a function of time and place. And so then to see some of the votes Votto did not get, you know, I'd say this, we're getting there, we're not there yet.
Yeah, I'm more upset now than if Votto had been totally blown away, which is what right. I kind of expected. I didn't expect him to finish this close. And because he finished this close, now I'm upset. Because
yeah, exactly. I agree 100% with you. And you go look over, you know, like I want to talk to the guy that didn't vote Tom Seaver, didn't vote him on the first ballot Hall of Famer. I want to go, I don't know where your bar is, buddy, but you might want to consider setting it just a tad lower. The people that voted, you know, but of course, like Stanton got a fifth place vote and a sixth place vote. Right. Joey got five fourth place votes and two fifth place votes. And just for people that don't know, and Anthony and I have been around Joey Votto tons. He is one of the most thoughtful, analytical, one of the most caring, efficient players. I mean, he takes such pride in his work. And in what he does, I'm not saying obviously Giancarlo Stanton does, and I know I've known Paul Goldschmidt since he was 12 years old. But you know, Votto is if the word craftsman fits into baseball, it's Joey Votto.
Well, okay, I'm glad we got our Votto love out of the way, but we got to throw some love, of course, to Giancarlo Stanton because
absolutely,
again, not that he wasn't deserving of this award. I was amazed at how close it ended up being. As we mentioned earlier, 59 home runs. Just had a monster offensive season, of course, and really did pull the Marlins into relevance late in the year, unexpectedly so, in that wild card chase. But 59 home runs, 132 RBIs, those are both major league highs, had a .631 slugging percentage. And this was kind of the Giancarlo Stanton a lot of us, you know, expected to come to life at some point. You know, he's had the injuries in his career, and some of them not his fault, of course. He was on MVP track a few years ago before he got hit in the face, that awful pitch where he got hit in the face with a fastball. So good on Giancarlo Stanton for putting it all together in 2017 and winning in one of the closest ballots in history. This is the third closest in NL MVP balloting and the fourth overall. And Giancarlo Stanton was overwhelmed and excited about this win.
This is unbelievable. You know, with the ups and downs of my career and everything that's happened, it's I'm just so thankful and appreciative to everyone around me, everyone that's pushed me, everyone that's been by my side and helped me out. So this is unbelievable.
All right, so good emotion from Giancarlo Stanton and a well-deserved award. And we're going to bring in our friend Mike Petriello from MLB.com here to talk about Stanton, who, Mike, I mean, you delve so much into the StatCast side of things. You know, the great data that we have now, and it's like Giancarlo Stanton was, I don't know who was made for who. StatCast was made for Stanton or Stanton was made for StatCast, but they pair wonderfully together. You know, the monster rockets off the bat, we were able to put those in context with the help of StatCast. But I did want to get your kind of general thoughts on Stanton winning this award you know, the kind of season he's put together and also the kind of statistical profile he has. He's just an absolute monster.
Yeah, Stanton has been absolutely fantastic for the last, you know, several seasons. I almost feel a little weird being disappointed that he won a little bit because I didn't have a vote, but if I did, I would have gone for Votto. But, you know, Stanton had a fantastic year. But what I find really interesting about him is that he has sort of changed his profile a little bit. You know, we've had 3 years of StatCast now, and I think the first year was very much the year of Giancarlo Stanton because, as you said, rockets off the bat, and we always knew even before StatCast that he was the hardest hitter in baseball, but we could never really measure it, put it in the context. And that first year of StatCast, we were just blown away not only by the fact that he was the hardest hitter, but by how much. And what's interesting is he's changed his game a little bit. If you look at the last 3 years, in 2015, his average exit velocity was 95.9, and then last year, 93.9, and then in 2017, it's 91.9. So he's actually not hitting the ball as hard as he once did. Now he's made up for that somewhat with the fact that he's not striking out as much, so that matters as well. It almost just seems like a little bit maybe of a smarter hitter. I don't know if he's doing this on purpose or it's just sort of the way it's happened, but it's interesting to see that even a legend like he can make a change like that.
Mike, did he hit more balls out to right field this year? Because in looking at the highlights today, I was amazed by how many balls he hit out to right field, but you know, as he closed up his stance and all of that, did it show up in the data?
Well, I don't have data in front of me for before and after he made that stance change, as you said. But, you know, looking at it year by year, it actually looks like he was pulling the ball a little bit more this year. And it actually looks like his opposite field percentage was the lowest it's been in the last couple of years. He's been pretty consistent over the years, you know, a little bit more ground balls this year. I think his launch angle has actually decreased each of the last 3 years. So I think part of it is just that the entire sport has been swept up in more home runs, obviously, and that has you know, helped everybody. But for him, I think it's simply he's made more contacts because last year his strikeout percentage was, I think, about 30%, and this year it dropped to 23%. And what that means is that's a lot more bat on ball. That's a lot more opportunities for him to hit lasers into the outfield.
Mike, I don't know if you know, the average casual fan, especially the non-Marlins fan, realizes, I mean, Stanton, it's not just the barreled balls. You know, it's not just home run derby. This guy's a really good defender in the outfield as well. He was a Gold Glove finalist this year, but you know, Statcast is able to tell us the strength of the arm is obviously second to none. There, he's a full player. He's a complete player.
Yeah, I think he and both he and Judge really are very similar in that regard. Like these large players who crush baseballs and are actually better outfielders than they get credit for. And he has had some throws that have been tracked, in the mid to upper 90s, and that's a skill as well. He's not a future DH, at least not in the next couple of years. I think he's at worst an average outfielder, and if you throw him the arm strength, maybe even slightly above average. So that makes him immensely valuable. I mean, obviously the bat will play no matter where. The bat would play even if he was just a DH, but being able to have some defensive skill out there, it makes him really a completely all-around player. And I do think that that gets taken into account somewhat in the MVP voting. I think if he was strictly a DH, people would hold that against him. And the fact that he wasn't, the fact that he's out there pretty much every day in the outfield and adding some value out there, that certainly helped. I mean, you've got to be an all-around player these days. You can't be a one-dimensional type.
One of the many things StatCast gives us is an ability to measure. You know, when you watch guys, put some context in it. And you guys ran today that Stanton hit 33 home runs at 110 miles per hour or better. And that just sort of puts into context how strong this guy is and his bat speed, right?
It absolutely does. That's I wish I had in front of me the average exit velocity for home runs, but I think it's something like 102. And the majority of home runs are probably about I think over 100. And the fact that he's able to do that is it's massive. I'm actually thinking about this. This is something I'm working on that I want to write about maybe next week. Is he hits the ball so hard that I think when we think about where he might get traded and if he gets traded, people are looking at different ballparks and they're thinking about maybe Fenway Park. Or, you know, he might hit 90 home runs in Fenway Park, right, with how short that wall is. And I'm actually not so sure that's true because he hits the ball so far that he's basically already putting all of his home runs out of it. He doesn't really hit a lot of balls that are, you know, these 300-foot wall scrapers. That's just not who he is. So I almost wonder if it's not going to matter that much. He hits a lot of these low lasers. I almost wonder if the Fenway wall will take away more than it offers it. But there's really has not been anybody like him until Aaron Judge. I think he's the only guy you can really have as any sort of comparable right now. They obviously remind you of one another in a lot of ways, but it's interesting because for years, I think the knock on Stanton was, you know, can he stay healthy enough to be out there? Obviously getting hit in the face a few years ago, that's a fluke thing, but he's had a couple of lower body injuries, some knee stuff, some hamstring stuff, which is not surprising for such a large man. And this was the year he was really able to put it together and stay out there. And I think that's what teams are gambling on because, you know, he's still a young player. It's not hard to see him continuing to do this for many years to come if he can stay healthy.
And that's what makes him so attractive. You talk about the trade possibility. Obviously, you have a chance now to acquire an MVP caliber player in the prime of his career, and he can do things that very few can do with that bat. And is a complete player and coming off 150 plus games for just the second time in his career. I'm tempted to ask if the price of Giancarlo Stanton just went up with his MVP, but it's already pretty high when he's making $295 million over the next 10 years and, you know, maybe prospect pieces on top of that. For either of you guys, what are your thoughts on the chances of that deal getting done here this winter?
Can I take the alternative view and say he's not going to go anywhere? I know everybody thinks he's going
to. I mean, that's kind of my prediction as well, just because the complicated, you know, it's so complicated, especially if you really legitimately want pieces back on top of, you know, getting rid of the contract. Now, if they're willing to eat a good portion of that contract or if it just becomes a straight salary situation, well, then that's a different story. But obviously, as of now, the asking price is high on both sides.
You know, I think he's going to be traded because I think Derek Jeter is going to look at the landscape and say, okay, if I want prospects, I'm going to have to trade Marcelo Ozuna. But if I want to have some payroll flexibility, I'm going to have to trade this guy and I'm going to have to take whatever the bidding will be. And I think if I'm John Mozeliak of the Cardinals or I'm running the San Francisco Giants, the guy is so appealing to me at a time when your franchise needs a boost. I would go do it. You know, the game financially is in a good spot. I know it's a ton of money. I just find him irresistible in a place like St. Louis, where every day of the season is baseball season.
Well, let's shift over to the American League side of the equation with Jose Altuve. And, you know, we've had the StatCast conversation with Stanton. Much of what we said about Stanton applies to Aaron Judge, who really changed, you know, the way we look at these numbers once again. He kind of turned StatCast on its head here in 2017. But, Mike, what jumped out at you about really both of those guys? I don't know if there was anything defining when it comes to Altuve from a StatCast perspective. Obviously, with Judge, you know, much like Stanton, it's the long ball. It's the monster home runs, the rockets off the bat.
Yeah, you're right. Altuve is interesting because he doesn't really stand out in any particular way when it comes to StatCast. And that doesn't mean he's not a great player. He obviously is. I think he's really good at a lot of different things. You know, he's above average in speed, but he's not elite in speed. You know, he's above average in terms of making contact, but he's not necessarily elite. He does a lot of the little things, but he also does a lot of the big things too. He obviously has turned himself into a bit of a power hitter. So I would have gone Judge were it me, but certainly these are 1 and 1A in my book. I mean, this was as close to a tie as I think I can remember in MVP voting. As far as Judge goes, you're right. He's really taken the crown, I think, away from Stanton in terms of who's the face of StatCast right now. It's probably Aaron Judge, because he basically broke every hitting record we have this year. He set the record for the most barrels, which is what we call a batted ball, the perfect combination of exit velocity and launch angle. He had 4 of the 5 hardest hit balls of the year. He had 10 of the top 25. He had the highest hard hit rate, the highest exit velocity. He had the highest, he had the longest home run of the year, the hardest hit home run of the year. I mean, I could go on for like an hour just naming all of his accomplishments. And also on defense, he was one of only, I think, a dozen or so outfielders who had a throw of 99 miles an hour. So he's an all-around player. He's a better outfielder than Stanton is, I believe, and a better outfielder than people think for a man of his size. I mean, this year in so many ways was the Aaron Judge show. And while it's perfectly reasonable that Altuve won because he's a great player, I would have sided with Judge in this. I don't really care about the consistency so much that I think other people do when you look at these two. I look at the totality of the season. And for me, I would have had Judge slightly ahead of Altuve, but really not by very much. There's no wrong answer here.
Mike, one of the things that Brian Kenny, Bill James quoted today was clutch stats. Close and late, Altuve had 441, Judge hit 215. I know some people, well, just tell me, how do you feel about that and the context of that? Do you even buy that as a critical fact?
Well, I would say two things to that. One is, anytime there's a stat that's quoted like that, it's automatically going to favor Altuve because it's based on batting average, right? And he's always going to be a better batting average hitter than Judge. But I'd rather have a home run when it's close and late than a single. And so that, I think that works against Judge. But the other thing is, when you look at clutch stats like that, we don't know enough about Aaron Judge to say it. Like that, I think it's an accurate indicator of what happened, because that's fair. This is literally what happened this season. Does that make Altuve a more clutch player than Judge is? I don't really know, because clutch stats don't really tend to correlate very well from year to year. You know, like Miguel Cabrera, for example, if he's clutch, is that because he's picking up his game in a big spot, or because he's Miguel Cabrera and he's always great? So I don't really look at it that much. And when you look at, for example, Judge, in what's called with men in scoring position, his OPS is over 1,000. With men on base, his OPS is over 1,000. And with the bases empty, his OPS is over 1,000. Like, there's slight variations there. But I really do think it goes back to just the batting average is always going to favor Altuve. So to your original question, would I factor that into my voting? Not really whatsoever, unless there was an enormous difference between the two. I think in the NL side, Chris Bryant had a shockingly terrible year in tight situations for the second year in a row, which I found interesting. And that might actually be a slight tiebreaker for me. But in the AL side, no, not at all.
Well, I think a lot of us agree with Mike that as far as the American League side goes, it was pretty much 1A and 1B, however you prefed it out, between Altuve and Judge, and really no wrong answer there. But Altuve did win this vote convincingly, just the 11th second baseman to win the MVP. No position has had fewer MVP winners. And, you know, there's a lot of support for Aaron Judge. I think maybe even Jose Altuve bought into that, because he was at a loss for words. Said he wasn't expecting this award.
You know, I don't know what to say. I wasn't expecting this. This is great. You know, I wanna thank God, my family, that is right outside, and all my teammates. You know, I think my teammates made this for me. They made me an MVP, and I'm so happy. I feel like I want to cry right now. I don't know what to do. But I wasn't expecting this. You know, I want to congratulate Adam Josh and Jose Ramirez for having a great season. And, you know, I don't know.
So Altuve is just a human dynamo, Richard. We saw it on the postseason stage as well, and it was great to see the baseball world at large get a closer look at this guy. But you've had a close look at him, of course, for a long time now in Houston. And, you know, the batting average are obviously – I was talking earlier about how rare Joey Votto's skill set is in today's game. And, of course, Altuve fits that mold as well. Hit 346 this year, best in the majors by a long shot, four straight seasons of 200 or more hits. What he did on the road this season was incredible. He's just an incredible hitter.
Yeah, he is. And when you ask his teammates about him, and for instance, Dallas Keuchel has known him since rookie ball. His first experience with him was he gets on the bus and goes, "Hey, who's the little kid in the back who keeps singing and won't shut his mouth?" And they go, "That's Jose Altuve. You're going to be playing with him for quite a few years." And he said, "Well, did you see something special then?" And he goes, "Well, I didn't see three batting titles. That would be kind of hard to predict, but he probably didn't see a Cy Young Award in me either." But the thing his teammates mentioned, not the batting championships, not the three straight All-Star games, none of that. They talk about the fact that about 4 years ago, he just changed his game. He comes in every day with a game plan, indoor cage, video, outdoor batting practice, throwing practice, the whole thing. And by the time he steps to home plate, in his mind, he has the at-bats mapped out in his mind. And he was helped by talking to Carlos Beltran this year. I think that refined his game. You could tell he tried to add a little power to his game this year, a little bit of launch angle and being a little bit more aggressive, although it's pretty hard to be more aggressive than he's been. He doesn't take that many pitches. But, when they were eliminated 2 years ago by the Royals, he was the first guy in A.J. Hinch's office after the game and said he hadn't played well. And he said, "This is on me. I feel responsible for this." You know, A.J. was like, "Hey, we're not playing in this game without you," you know, all that. But he said that was so telling that was the responsibility the guy had. The guy wants to be great. He wants to play in All-Star games. He wants to win MVPs, all of that. But he felt a personal responsibility for the team. That, you know, in a lot of ways in this business, that's the highest compliment you can give a guy.
Yeah, I mean, he's so fun to watch. And we gravitate, of course, towards the size, you know, the size combined with the skill set. It's so special. And here in Cleveland, where I'm at, I mean, Jose Ramirez kind of fits that mold as well. You know, sure. A chip on his shoulder over there at second base. And he got a stray first place vote in this AL MVP vote. AL MVP wasn't quite as crowded and complicated as the NL. The National League, seven guys received a first-place vote. Stanton and Votto, of course. Paul Goldschmidt, who finished third, he received four first-place votes. Nolan Arenado and Charlie Blackman of the Rockies both received multiple first-place votes, and Chris Bryant of the Cubs received one. So that was I was so glad to not have an NL MVP vote this year because it was definitely complex. But although maybe I wish I had one now because I would have cast for Joey Votto. But the American League, of course, it was more straightforward. Altuve, Judge, Ramirez, 1-2-3, Altuve with the 27 first place votes. But anything else stand out to you? I know one thing stood out to you, Richard, about the AL MVP ballot.
Yeah, I think of the whole season, when we're done with the season, Mike Trout stands out. The guy missed 48 games, and look at the numbers he still put up. A 6.9 WAR, his OPS was higher than any of the other finalists. Weighted on base percentage, weighted runs created, all of that stuff. You know, he hit 306. I mean, you know, it wasn't because he was hurt and he missed 48 games. He didn't finish first or second in MVP voting for the first time in his career. But this season was a reminder. This is one great player.
Absolutely. And this might have been the 1 year window for everybody else in the American League. You know, try to get your MVP right now. So good job, Jose Altuve.
Right. He's taking it back next year.
You know he'll figure prominently into the voting, assuming health, because Mike Trout is certainly unbelievable. But a lot of great candidates this year. And did want to touch on one other news item from Thursday, Richard, the qualifying offers. There were nine guys offered the qualifying offer of $17.4 million for 2018. Eric Hosmer of the Royals, Mike Moustakas of the Royals, Lorenzo Cain of the Royals, Jake Arrieta of the Cubs, Wade Davis of the Cubs, Greg Holland of the Rockies, Alex Cobb of the Rays, Lance Lynn of the Cardinals, and Carlos Santana of the Indians. Every single one of those guys I just mentioned turned it down. No real surprise there. All of them, of course, seeking multi-year commitments I don't know if they'll all get, you know, $17 million in average annual value, but they're certainly all worthy of multi-year commitments as opposed to the one-year offer. This is, of course, part of the process. Teams trying to recoup draft pick compensation should those guys sign elsewhere. So, Richard, any thoughts that jump out to you about those nine guys? I don't know if my question is, do any of them still wind up with their 2017 clubs? I don't know if anybody jumps out to you in that regard.
No, I think Kansas City might have an outside shot of signing one of those three guys, Hosmer, Moustakas, or Kane, but who knows? You know, the thing about the qualifying offer, until 2 years ago, no player had ever accepted it. It just wasn't done. And then Colby Rasmus, Matt Wieters, and Brett Anderson took it. Then last year, Jeremy Hellickson and Neil Walker took it. And I think that made teams much more cautious. So if you've got a Jake Arrieta, you're going to make the qualifying offer, because if he takes it, you're fine with it. Hosmer, Moustakas, you know, Lance Lynn, you pay him, the guy, the $17 million. But otherwise, you've got to be much more careful, because I think players are being more cautious about what's out there for them on the open market.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always a risk equation for both sides. I mean, to turn down that $17 million is no small thing. But, of course, the draft pick compensation issue has changed dramatically this year. So it's not the crux. It's not the scarlet letter that it once was, you know, being tied to the draft pick. But I thought the Rays offering it to Alex Cobb was a little bit of a surprise, just because it is the Rays and that's such a, you know, be such a large percentage of their payroll. But of course, they read the market pretty well, because you're hearing a lot of love for Alex Cobb out there, even though he's still working right his way back to his pre-Tommy John self. But you're right.
I think he struggled with it a little bit. You know, I think he probably was the guy the most tempted. But like you said, the feelers, what the vibes he's getting on the market is, it's going to be a good winner to be Alex Cobb.
I'll be curious. I think you're right. The Royals might have a chance at least one of those guys. You know, they might bid with their hearts a bit on Eric Hosmer, because he is still so young for free agent standards, for a team that, even if it is in transition, you know, he might still fit in that framework. I think Carlos Santana will be really interesting. I think maybe, you know, there's some underappreciation for how strong that bat is, as a switch hitter who just gets on base consistently, you know, on-base percentage for his career north of 350, but maybe that'll work out for the Indians to bring him back, because the first base market is so crowded this winter. We'll see how that works out. But good luck to all nine of those guys as they you know, move on from turning down $17.4 million. I wouldn't do it personally, Richard, but I guess I can understand why they might. But
yeah, you know, the two guys, let's keep an eye on Wade Davis and Greg Holland. Last year, we had the three largest closer contracts in history. And let's see if teams are still so anxious to go out and spend, to allocate that much money to the ninth inning. It'll be interesting to see. But I think all those guys, those nine guys, they're going to have fine off seasons.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And already a fine off season for Mr. Giancarlo Stanton and Mr. Jose Altuve. They are your MVPs for 2017. My thanks, as always, to Richard Justice for joining us to talk about that. And our thanks to Mike Petriello as well. Thanks for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time.